Welcome to CLC Connects, the podcast that connects CLC experts with Lake County. I'm your host, Jessie Prue. A few months ago, the Department of Education rolled out sweeping changes to FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid. Among other things, the new application is designed to take less time to fill out. Today, I'm chatting with CLC's financial aid director, Ray Gonzalez, and a financial aid coach here at CLC, Hema Mariscal, pronouns she, her, Aya, about everything FAFSA and financial aid. Ray and Hema, welcome to CLC Connects.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I'm glad you're here. Could you maybe quickly outline the changes to FAFSA and just tell us why they matter and who they're going to affect most?
Okay. So with the FAFSA Simplification Act of 2020, there was the Department of Ed wanted to make the FAFSA application simpler. By that, they started this initiative called the FAFSA Simplification, where they reduced a lot of the questions, also being able to work with the IRS directly, meaning they just plug in the information and then tax information gets imported into the FAFSA. They don't even have to plug in anything in the manual. So simpler, right? Less questions, less time to do a FAFSA. Another key change is that there's no more EFC. So we know that when you're done with your FAFSA, you get your EFC, which is your estimated expected family contribution. Mm-hmm. And that's no longer a thing anymore. It's the student aid index. So we kind of have to go back because we're still working with 23, 24 students. So students that are attending fiscal year 24, we have to use EFC for that because that's the term we're still using. Mm-hmm. For 24, 25. It's student aid index. And the calculation for it is way different.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's no more zero EFC. So zero EFC was the full eligibility for Pell.
Yeah.
Now it's negative 1,500 to zero is full eligibility.
Okay.
And then anything. So that's a change. Another change is we're so used to awarding half-time, full-time financial aid. Now we have to award, if you're in 12 hours, this is how much Pell you get. If you're at 11 hours, this is how many Pell. Yeah, so just more internal stuff. But yeah, with these many changes, there was a big delay in the release of the FAFSA application. We were told by December 2023, and we know that we got the actual soft launch release December 30th. And so things haven't been smooth. It's been, some students have been able to complete their FAFSA in 15 minutes, which is like record time. Yeah. Other students have been struggling. And I think, Hema, I'll let you speak to some of that struggle.
Yeah. So usually every year, the FAFSA opens up October 1st. But with this new FAFSA simplification, there was a lot of changes that needed to be made in the background to make sure that the application was ready. Unfortunately, there's still some bugs and that the Department of Education is working on fixing. For me, for example, as a independent student, I completed my 24-25 FAFSA within less than 4 minutes.
Wow.
So that was simple, fast, easy to do. But when it's getting complicated, it's when we have students who are dependent students, and then they have to add contributors to their FAFSA. Contributors are those who have to add information to a student's FAFSA application. In some cases, it's the parents, they're the contributors, or if a student is married, it's their spouse.
Okay.
And that's when we're running into some of the issues because now every contributor has to create their own FSA ID, which is an account with the Department of Education. And when they create the FSA ID, the person also has to make sure that their identity gets verified.
Okay.
So that's where it's taking a little bit longer. And then also a new thing that's going on this year with this simplification is that the contributors who don't have a Social Security number also have to create an FSA ID now.
Okay.
Which they didn't have to, which they couldn't in the past. In the past, in order for a contributor to sign off on a student's FAFSA, they would just print out a signature page, turn in the signature page, a paper page with the wet signature, and we could, in our financial aid department, could process it, or they can mail it in to the Department of Education. what's happening is that's where we're receiving the most errors when the contributor is creating their FSA ID without a social security number. They are not able to move forward with the process for different reasons. It is just giving them several different error messages, and we're not getting a lot of help or assistance from the Department of Education on solutions on how to move forward, because they're working on them and they themselves don't know exactly what needs to be fixed.
Okay. So a contributor is anyone who might be contributing to your income level. Is that correct?
No. That's what I was going to say as a disclaimer.
Yeah.
A contributor isn't necessarily someone who's going to contribute to paying for your school.
Uh-huh.
It's just a contributor is a parent or someone that is that you're putting the information. So
Okay. Your
parent, so if you're living with your parents, both parents are contributors.
Mm-hmm.
If you live with the mom and stepdad, they're both contributors. So Okay. It could be basically anyone that you're putting their information on the FAFSA. It doesn't necessarily mean that contributor, you're contributing to the cost of paying for school.
Got it. That makes sense. I've also heard there's some errors in calculations with the FAFSA form. We don't have to get all of them here, but I guess my biggest question is how will those errors affect my financial aid package?
So what happened was, this has been a known issue that they didn't use the right formula for the the inflation numbers. And so what happened was they didn't use the inflation numbers for 2023. And so what happened was, using the wrong formula, about $1.5 billion got left on the table.
Oh, wow.
$1.8 billion got left on the table. And so NPR did an article on a student who was eligible for Pell Grant, I mean, like $1,500, but that's still assistance. They're eligible for $1,500, do the FAFSA next year. Now they're not eligible for anything. So that's what kind of opened up the article. But it's been a known issue.
Okay.
The Department of Ed, from just reading articles, it sounds like they failed to fix it in a timely manner. I think just because of the pressure of just trying to get the FAFSA out before the required deadline of December 31st.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If they repair, will that affect my student aid, or is this just going to delay it a little bit? Or
it might delay the receiving of the FAFSA. They're not sure what they're going to do. They're not sure if they're going to rerun all of the FAFSA applications over again, or if they're just going to send us what was done already and then send us another FAFSA with the corrected calculation.
Yeah, one of the articles did say that the Department of Education is going to take out some of the numbers that they were using in the current FAFSA to adjust to those inflation numbers. But they did say there may be a delay in schools receiving the FAFSA results for students.
Yeah. Okay. So when does the FAFSA open generally?
I stated before, it's always October 1st.
October 1st. Is it important to jump on it quickly?
Yes. Okay. We do advise our students to try to complete it as soon as possible, because for federal aid, for the Pell Grant, usually there's no deadline for to receive those funds. But in some states, if they are going to be offering grants for students, those do have deadlines. Here in Illinois, we do have the MAP grant, and there are deadlines for that grant, and the state doesn't tell us right away when their deadlines are.
Okay.
So we just want to make sure that our students don't lose out on that.
Yeah. Who should fill out the FAFSA?
For students to be eligible to fill out a FAFSA, they have to fall under certain criteria, right? They have to be eligible non-citizens or citizens of the United States. They have to have graduated high school. They are attending an accredited institution and are in an eligible program of study.
Mm-hmm. Also, so yes, high school graduates, GED, or high school, I believe the new term is high school diploma equivalent for GED. And then also, I don't want to get into it, but there is, like if a student doesn't have a GED or a high school diploma, they can get financial aid. I mean, still with the U.S. citizen, permanent resident, they still can get financial aid, but it's a whole separate process.
Okay.
But those students are eligible for FAFSA. But there's also the state application, which is the alternative application. And those are for undocumented students, but there's also three criteria that they have to meet. One of them is they have to have graduated from a high school in the state of Illinois. Because MAP is a state, so it doesn't pertain to Wisconsin residents, unfortunately. It's just Illinois residents. So have graduated from high school, from Illinois high school, sign an affidavit that when it is open for them to apply for residency that they do. And then the third one, what is the third one?
The third one is that they have to at least been going to a school in Illinois for at least 3 years.
Yep.
So it doesn't have to be consecutively. So let's say the student went to kindergarten in Illinois. They moved out of state. Then they did their other grades in another state. They come back. And then they finished the last 2 years of high school here in Illinois. As long as they did 3 years of some type of K through 12 in Illinois, they qualify. But they do have to have graduated from an Illinois high school. And they have to attend an Illinois MAP-eligible institution.
Okay.
So they can't use that aid. Even if they're residents of Illinois, they can't go to another state and use that. Because every state every state here in the country has different rules for of how they, if they do assist undocumented students.
Okay. If you or if I or anyone, if anyone, you know, graduated in like, say, 2002, are they eligible for, you know, they're just coming back to college? Should that person who maybe, I don't know, 38, 39 years old, should they be filling out FAFSA? If they're thinking about coming back to school, or is there like a expiration on this?
Absolutely. They should come to our financial aid office, inquire to see what application they'll be eligible for.
Okay.
So there are limits of how much aid they can be receiving, but most definitely, yes, fill out the application that you're eligible for.
Okay.
Great. So it's always the better late than never.
Yes. Yeah.
Answer, like, if they've never gone to school, they want to go to school with their kids or do, you know, change their career. It's never too late. It's never too late to apply. Because with the FAFSA and to qualify for Pell, you can't have a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
So basically, if you do have a bachelor's degree, unfortunately, you're not going to get, and you want to come back to CLC, you could still get aid. It'll only be loans. We don't try to, we don't advertise loans because we're trying to keep the cost of college low, and we try to encourage CLC scholarships, any type of other aid, because there are a lot of initiatives here at the college that do help out to pay for school. But never late than never. Definitely encourage every student, if you're listening, that you're listening, to definitely apply for FAFSA, because even though you might think you make a lot, I mean, the new formula nowadays, students can be making, or parents or family can be making $85,000, and they can still possibly qualify for the minimum Pell. So definitely an great option.
Yep. And then the applications, the FAFSA and the alternate application don't just look at income. It does look at a lot of different things within your household. So it's not just solely on the income.
Nice. I know when I remember when I was doing FAFSA, I think I was probably, I don't know, maybe like 23 years old or something. And I was living out of state from my parents, both my parents, but I still relied on their, I guess they would now be called contributors, although I was separated from them. So if, you know, is that still, how often does that issue come up that you have independent students and they have to have their parents' information and they might not, you know, maybe they have a great relationship with their parents, but they live far away. Is that still a factor?
It is.
Okay.
It definitely is. So we do have those students that are very independent, right? They moved out of their parents' house when they were 18. They're living on their own. They're adults in our eyes. In my eyes, you're an adult. But in the eyes, like I always say, in the eyes of the Department of Education, if you're under the age of 24, you're not married, you have no kids, you're not a veteran, you know, all the questions that it asks you for dependency, mm-hmm. it wants to know, are you an independent student? And if you answer no to all of them, we need parent information.
Okay.
So if, you know, if mom, or if you got kicked, even if you got kicked out, but you still have a good relationship with mom, they kicked you out because you were playing Xbox all night, because you still have contact with mom, we would still need mom's information.
Okay. So, what about for the students that maybe don't have that contact anymore? Is there like any help for those people?
Yes, we do have what is called dependency override, where depending on each student's situation, we can look at their situation and make a what's called a professional judgment decision where we can overturn that dependency and have them qualify as independent students. And we do have a lot of those situations, especially students who we have that are coming from a different country mm-hmm. and their parents or the guardians are living in a different country and they're here on their own.
Okay.
So that happens a lot as yeah. well. But it depends on each situation. We want to make sure that's clear. Yeah. That's why we encourage our students, if they have any questions about that, to make sure they come and see us at our office and we can sit down with them and go through all the process and make the advise them the best way we can.
Excellent. Would that answer kind of be the same if, like, your parents don't agree to fill out FAFSA?
There are parents that refuse to provide their information, and there is a situation for that. I mean, unfortunately, they're not going to get the caveat of the professional or the special circumstance. But what happens is, unfortunately, those students can only qualify for an unsubsidized loan.
Okay.
And with the unsubsidized loan, that's a loan that accrues interest as soon as it gets dispersed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So definitely encourage contributors.
Yeah.
I'll just say just on that point, just definitely encourage contributors. You know, if you're a student, to fill out the FAFSA. I mean, I know parents have questions. I mean, I'm first generation. Hema's first generation as well. Like, we noticed that some students, you know, their parents are very hesitant to give their information. Mm-hmm. And just having that conversation, you know, we're more than happy to have that conversation and explain to them, because they might not know. I mean, you're 18-year-old having, you know, asking your parents for tax information or, yeah. like, sensitive information, where they're trying to protect their identity and their information. So it does get a little scary. But just having that simple conversation of, hey, we're here, we're trying to get financial aid
yeah.
to your child. Like, we would rather have those conversations than just to sweep it under the rug and say, hey, my parents don't want to do this.
Do we ever invite parents in to learn about the financial aid and just to kind of like know what we're doing and know why we might be, you know, as students asking for their social security numbers or any other number and tax information?
Yeah. So one of the things that our department does and I do is go out to the local high schools and have presentations with parent nights, and we give them all the information and we allow them to ask us questions. And then here as well, when we do our workshops and our presentations, we welcome the whole community. We welcome the students and the parents to come.
Nice.
So that we are able to answer not just the students' questions, but to make sure that the parents understand the process. And if they have any questions in regards to their information, we can answer those questions.
Is there financial aid available for our international students? And how do they qualify for that?
So there is some scholarships through our CLC Foundation that are for international students. And speaking of the application, so with the CLC scholarship application, there's two applications, right? A general and a supplemental. The general is more of like, provide us your goals. What program are you in? So kind of detailing their goals for the program, or just what their outcomes are, or their expectations and all that. And then the supplemental is more for like any clubs or anything that they're interested in. So there is so if they're a part of like a group or something that categorizes them, that's what they'll be able to be categorized. And so one of the fields that gets imported from the application is the international one. And so that's how we're able to, like, if they apply for these two applications, there's specific international scholarships that we have for students. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be eligible to apply for FAFSA or the RISE alternative application, but they do have the option for the CLC scholarship. Now, again, just this disclaimer, the CLC scholarships are more kind of like a last resort kind of thing.
Okay.
Because with international students, they have to have all that laid out for them. But it is, you know, we do have scholarships for them.
Can you tell me some of the things that you can use financial aid for?
So obviously the key one is tuition and fees. And so they can use it for books. So a lot of students can request a book voucher that can be used at the bookstore. We basically essentially build a credit on their accounts, and then they're able to use it at the bookstore. And so there's that. They can use the excess money that they get in their refunds from the Pell Grants to just utilize anything for educational expenses. So some students can get, you know, do get a nice, some hefty refunds. Yeah. They use it for like laptops, books, travel. They use it for gas. So there's that type of funds that the FAFSA can help. I don't know how much is there.
Yeah, I mean, living expenses, mm-hmm. anything that allows you to continue your education.
Yep.
Okay.
So anything you can categorize under educational expense, food.
Yeah.
While they're in school.
What about study abroad programs?
Yeah. So with study abroad programs, so students can utilize financial aid. Again, the big key caveat is that they must meet the FAFSA requirements to receive financial aid, but they can totally use Pell Grants, loans for those to help pay for those expenses.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have known that.
Yes. Yes. No, that is something we're trying to. So here I'm working with our Department of Global Engagement on just kind of building like a better process for students. So students know that there is financial aid available for them. And CLC scholarships as well for them. If they're planning to do like a field trip, there are scholarships that are willing to pay for some of those field trips.
That's
as well.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Are there any forms of financial aid that are not tied to FAFSA that students can receive or other applications they should know about?
I would say, well, one of them is our LEAF grant. So our LEAF, Lancer Emergency Assistance Funds. So that one is for emergencies. So if you have a flat tire or
with the LEAF program, we assist students who have emergency needs besides tuition, fees, mm-hmm. books. Those are not covered under that fund, but medical emergencies.
Oh, wow.
Car repairs,
utilities.
Rent, mortgage,
mm-hmm.
Anything that is stopping them or can stop them from focusing on their education.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't do legal fees.
No. Cell phone bills.
We don't do cell phone bills. We don't do
credit cards,
car payments, things like that. We don't do, but any other type of emergencies we do, and we've helped so many students through this fund.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We also help students that have food insecurities. We provide grocery cards, refer them to our share market, gas cards, bus passes for the semester. So this is a very important fund that we do have in our department. And if any student has any questions regarding that, please stop by and ask us about it.
Yeah. Can you tell us your room number or a way to contact you?
We are located behind the WASC, the okay. Welcome and One Stop Center. And also to piggyback off of that. So one of our LEAF committee members is our homeless liaison, mm-hmm. here at the college. So there are housing insecurities. We do give her a little heads up to say, hey, the student might be a good you might want to reach out to them. So we do have a lot of resources to help out at students, but.
Yeah.
Located behind the Welcome and One Stop.
All right. Good. I have a couple student questions from social media. Estrella Ramirez would like to know, what do they need to sign up for the RISE Act? And maybe you can give us a little background on what the RISE Act is. You mentioned it earlier, too.
Yeah, so the RISE Act, it was formerly known as the RISE Act. It's now known as the Alternative Application for Illinois Financial Aid. And it was an act passed by the state of Illinois allowing students who are undocumented and also included transgender students, but now transgender students can apply for the FAFSA, which is great. But now it's solely for undocumented students that they can apply for any type of Illinois grant that is available for our students here in the state of Illinois. what is needed. It's similar to what a student would need for to apply for a FAFSA. Depending on the year, it will depend on the taxes that are needed for income information, any type of assets, investments that they may have. It'll ask questions about their household. If they're a dependent student, they'll have to provide their parent information. If they're married, then they'll ask about their spouse's information. So it's just very similar to the information that the FAFSA asks.
Okay.
And like we mentioned, they have to fall under the criteria of them graduating from an Illinois high school, attending an Illinois school for at least 3 years, and being residents of Illinois.
Yep.
Okay. Jordan Najira asked, is there any financial aid help for DACA students?
Yes, so they would not be eligible for the FAFSA, but they can apply for the alternate application. Okay. And we have, through our scholarship foundation, we have a lot of the different types of scholarship opportunities for them, because our scholarship foundation scholarships, a lot of them are not based on immigration status.
Okay.
And then some are specifically for undocumented students.
Nice. And then Brenda Rivas asks, when is the FAFSA due? And also, how can I get my parents' side of it done? Which I think we kind of already talked about, but when is it due?
I mean, honestly, they're just as soon as possible. So as soon as you're hearing this, definitely do it. There's not really much of a deadline, as Hamid has mentioned, but definitely push for it. I mean, we do have workshops in February that we can share. we do have workshops available. We do have FAFSA appointments that you can schedule. So you come to the Welcome and One-Stop, schedule a FAFSA appointment. We do have specialists and HEMA available to complete those some of those appointments.
Okay.
Every student's here to try to get us assistance. There is assistance. It's just a matter of completing the application.
Yeah. So bring your parents to the workshops.
Yes. Yes. Please. Yes. And then have them also try to complete the FSA ID.
Yeah.
I think that's just one of the struggles with these FAFSA workshops, is that some students don't bring their contributors. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it difficult for us to be able to complete the FAFSA. I mean, we've had, a handful of FAFSAs we're not able to complete because parents are there, but they're not able to complete that FSA information. So just encouraging parents, students to just complete the FSA IDs before you come to these FAFSA workshops. Of course, we'll still help you out, but definitely encourage that.
So what I'm hearing is that it might be a little bumpy right now, but it's definitely going to be worth it. Mm-hmm. So
Definitely. Have
some patience, and hopefully it'll clear up a little bit. Is there anything that we didn't cover? Is there anything that you absolutely need people to know and act on?
For the deadlines, when is FAFSA due? Well, I mean, there are deadlines, and it depends on the time that you're in, which semester you're in, which FAFSA you're going to complete. And we just want our students to know, please don't wait until towards the end of the semester or after the semester, mm-hmm. when there's times that we are not able to go back and provide you that aid, even though you are eligible on paper for the FAFSA, but there are deadlines for that. So as soon as possible, don't wait last minute. I know students are busy focusing on their education, but this portion is really, really important for them, obviously, to assist them to cover their education. So as soon as they have a question, please don't hesitate. Come and ask us. We're here to help. We're more than happy to answer your questions and figure out a plan for you.
Excellent.
Yeah. My message to... if you think you're not eligible for anything, don't think that. There's all types of help for all different types of students. Whether you're, whether you think your parents make too much, or whether you are living alone and you don't think that anything is going to help you out, there is help. There are Pell grants. There are MAP grants. There are CLC scholarship grants. CLC scholarships, there's grants for different programs. So one of them that I want to do like a little plug on, because I know they want the assistance, is the, there is our biological and health sciences program. They have a PATH grant.
Yeah.
And so with the PATH grant, it's just, they give you a stipend just for attending those classes. And so basically there's different helps out there. It's just a matter of applying, and unfortunately, if you even if you don't qualify for anything for FAFSA, we still need the FAFSA to distinguish your need. Yeah. And so that might be able to qualify you for at least something. So you might not be eligible for Powell, but there might be some CLC scholarships that are available.
Awesome. Yes, we want our students here at CLC to complete their degree certificates, transfer out with the least debt possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's our goal. Yeah. That's one of the main reasons why we don't advertise student loans.
Mm-hmm.
But we understand sometimes those are needed. And if a student does need a student loan, our specialists will sit with the student one-on-one when they're first-time borrowers to explain the whole process and how they work.
Yeah, that's really great. Yeah. Glad to hear that. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
If somebody needs more information, where should I direct them? Behind the Welcome and One Stop.
Behind the Welcome and One Stop. finaid@clcillinois.edu.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah, I mean, if they have any questions that I can answer, or if any community groups out there are listening, or any departments here at CLC groups, and if they would like for us to come in and do a workshop or a presentation, they can reach out to me at fa.facoach@clcillinois.edu.
All right. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having us.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in. Still have questions about financial aid? Visit a financial aid office at any of our CLC campuses. You can also check out a financial aid workshop at our annual open house event on April 13th, 2024. We've got a lot of great episodes planned for season 3, so keep listening. CLC Connects is a production of the CLC PR and Marketing Department with musical help by faculty member Dave Esma.